Welcome all sports fans. On this podcast,
no sport is left behind.
I'm Justin Williams.
I'm Cabrera Duran, and this is our brother from Down Under.
Me, Wallace Bruce.
We are the Pro Sports Podcasters.
Filling you in on the latest news from the world of sports. Welcome back to the Pro Sports Podcasters. I'm Nee Wallace Bruce, NWB, and I'm joined as always by Mr. Cope Durand. Kobe, how are you?
I'm great, even better today because we've got a golfer on.
Yes. So Cope is our resident golf expert. You can find him at Cope Life Golf. But we have a very special guest. She has just participated in her first LPGA event on the weekend in the Mediheal Championship. She hails from Belgium, but nowadays you can find her in Raleigh, North Carolina. It's Leslie Klutz. Leslie, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
No worries. You must be on a high still after your first LPGA event over the weekend.
Yeah, it was really fun. I played the Monday qualifier. I was trying to do a Hail Mary to qualify for the Olympics because on the women's side, once you get into an LPGA event, but if you're not a member of the tour, it doesn't get you anywhere other than obviously a nice paycheck when you make the cut. But my purpose of trying to get into an LPGA event this year is trying to get world ranking points to see if I could still qualify to play the Olympics for Belgium. I didn't quite succeed at that, but I did play my first LPGA event, which was pretty cool. Yeah, it was really nice. It was at Lake Merced in San Francisco, and it was a tough course, and most of the field played in the U.S. Open the week before, and it was right across the street at Olympic, and the course was very similar, and it was very challenging, and I love being out there, and I feel like I can play with the big girls, so I'm pretty motivated after all of this, and just want to get out there and have my card, and compete with all of them.
Excellent. And just in terms of your goal of qualifying for the Olympics, is there a cutoff date for that or a last event, if you will, that you can shoot for?
Yes. So that will be in 2 weeks. Yeah, so this was pretty much it. That was my last chance.
Well, there's 4 years' time. Sorry, 3 years' time in Paris. Hopefully we'll see you there.
Exactly.
Yeah, the conditions the last couple of weeks, weather-wise, for both the Women's U.S. Open and the Mediheal were brutal. When you talk about challenging, that was about as challenging as it gets. How did you find the weather conditions?
You know, coming from Belgium, so I'm kind of used to overcast, maybe a little bit chilly. But yeah, I thought it was okay. Obviously, I don't know if you've seen on Sunday or even over the weekend on TV, the tournament, that it can get very foggy, but I didn't have any of that. It wasn't too bad, but it did get very windy during the qualifier, much windier than throughout the week. So once the tournament actually started, I kind of overestimated the wind sometimes, but luckily I had a good caddy. So yeah, we worked that out pretty quick.
So PXG recently announced a women's tournament happening later on this year. It'll be a match play event going over the period of 2 weeks. Is that something you'll be involved in?
I think I'm registered for it, but depending on the schedule with Q School and all of that, I'll have to see when it gets closer to it if it's too much or not. But I mean, it sounds super interesting, and yeah, I love playing match play, so I'm all about it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you prefer match play to stroke play, or if there's a particular specialty you think you have.
I think I can be pretty good at match play. I'm trying to get better at stroke play, but growing up, we used to play a lot of match play for the national teams. We have this tournament called the European Team Championships, and there are four of them, so like boys and girls, and then ladies and men, so depending on how old you are, and obviously which gender, then you get into one of those teams. But in those tournaments, you play in a team of six people, and so you play 2 days of stroke play, and then it gets into match play versus the other teams, and that can get really fun. I always loved that. Had some good success there. And then I also played in the British Ladies Am, which is, you know, our version of the US Am. Yeah, the last time I played, I finished second, so that was really good.
Wow.
And that was right before I decided to play Q School, so I like match play.
Right on.
Yeah. What changes have you noticed, I guess, for example, going from the LPGA Symetra Tour to the MediHeal event? What were some of the key differences in that for a player?
Between LPGA and Symetra?
Yeah.
It's honestly quite a big difference. The range balls, for one. I mean, on Symetra, they have a range ball sponsor, and I'm sure they part of the purse and all of that. So obviously, whoever wants to give money. But the quality of range balls is just huge difference, and it just makes your practice so much better. I mean, yeah, it just kind of gives me a headache sometimes on Symetra. But it was super nice to play the LPGA event and just have nice range balls. And yeah, just felt so spoiled for a week. And then two is the course, like how it's set, not necessarily set up, but the quality of the course is much better. They play it a little bit longer, I would think. Even though on Symetra they try to make it as similar as possible, I do think it's a little more like championship worthy, I guess. And then also, huge difference was the food, because, you know, that's what we're all about.
That's not the first time I've heard that.
Symetra, so actually, I have some inside information on this. So on Symetra, the food, so usually it's breakfast and lunch. That's kind of typical throughout the week in like the player dining or the player lounge or whatever they want to call it. But on Symetra, the food is actually on the sponsor, the title sponsor. So whatever they want to do for the food is what there is. And if they don't care about that, then there is nothing. Or it's like not very good. On LPGA, they have much more requirements about that. And it was great. Yeah, I ate so much in San Francisco. And it was actually a reliable breakfast for the first time. Because on Symetra, I mean, the fact sheet will say, oh, there's breakfast in the clubhouse. But then you get there and it's like a muffin and a coffee. I'm like, great. That was super nutritional. Yeah, huge difference. So I just feel like there are less worries. At least from the one tournament I played, I was like less worried about, you know, I just had to show up and it was great. Yeah, just had to show up. That's awesome. And I could put in good work. And then also a difference that I found was just the overall mentality of the players. It's a little more like cutthroat, not a social hour on the putting green. And I felt like I do better in an environment like that where, you know, you can really focus and you're there to do your work and then you leave. And then I just feel like on Symetra sometimes, I guess this is how it goes with different levels. And I mean, also on Symetra, you're usually traveling by yourself. You don't have a caddy, so you're kind of relying on, you know, your friends on tour to hang out with, so you're not by yourself the whole time. Whereas, you know, on LPGA, you have to have your caddy. So at least, you know, you kind of have your own little team there already. So maybe that's why there's less of that social hour going on. But yeah, I love playing on the LPGA. Definitely want to be there.
I gotta ask, are you following the Euro?
Yeah, of course. I watched the Belgium match. Yeah. I don't know about any other matches. Yeah. I have to catch up on my news.
Okay, so you're just following the Belgian team.
Yeah, of course. Who are you rooting for?
Netherlands, of course. Netherlands, come on. The Orange.
How are they doing? Are we playing against each other?
No, not yet. They will be eventually.
That's going to be good.
I'll say this, though. We made our own predictions for the Euro, and I actually picked Lukaku as the Golden Boot winner.
There you go.
So secretly, I am rooting for them a little bit, right?
Now, just staying with things Belgium. If you got the call, would you look to represent Belgium in a team tournament?
Oh, yeah, totally.
What would your goal in golf be? Would you prefer to win a major or to win a team tournament with your country?
Well, right now it depends on the paycheck, but I am more motivated about, like, I really like team stuff. Like, I love playing in college as a team. I love playing for the national team as a team. Yeah, I think it's just really cool to have an individual sport like golf and then you put it into a team. Yeah, I think that's great to, like, play for something like bigger than yourself. Yeah, I just like that camaraderie, and But I mean, I'd also like to win a major. That would be great too. I don't know if I would pick. Maybe in a couple of years, ask me again.
Well, why not both? Why not both?
Exactly.
Well, she did mention playing in the team aspect in college. You were a UNC Tar Heel, correct?
Yes. Go Heels.
100%. Okay. I am a Tar Heel at heart when it
there you go.
Comes to the sports. Huge fan of their basketball program, massive fan of their football program. I'm actually a fan of the Denver Broncos as well, and we just got one of their top running backs in the draft, so I'm loving it right now.
Nice.
But how was it for you playing as a Tar Heel in that program? How did you like playing on the college tour?
Yeah, I liked it. It was definitely a lot of adjustment my freshman year, golfing wise. I mean, just everything really. It wasn't so much, people always ask me like, oh, was it a culture shock, you know, when you came to the US? And not so much really. It was more figuring out, you know, school and really on the golf part. Like, I had no idea what all these tournaments were. I remember that, you know, coach was talking about like ACCs, and I'm like, what is ACCs? I don't know anything. And then she just looks at me like, you're kidding, right? And I'm like, sure, I'm kidding. I don't know. Okay. Don't bench me. Great. But yeah, then I, you know, figure it out. It's the conference and all of that. But yeah, I thought it was really cool. Yeah, it's definitely a unique golfing experience because you really get smushed into a team. And then depending on the team, it can actually be super individual or not. Yeah. So it's a little strange. Yeah. Definitely different than the national team, I would say.
And how did you end up at North Carolina?
Let's see. So this must have been, I guess, junior year in high school. I played pretty well that summer. I finished well in some amateur events and some junior events. You know, I had a couple emails. I pretty much had a short list. And so I picked three schools to go visit because I wanted to go visit over fall break with my dad. We didn't know much about U.S. colleges, so it was kind of difficult to, just from online,
yeah,
to see what it's like or is it even good. So we picked three schools. So I ended up visiting Oklahoma State, Boulder, Colorado, and then Chapel Hill, which was a very good mix of schools to, I guess, a sample of U.S. college.
Yeah.
Yeah, I learned a lot, but Chapel Hill was a no-brainer because I was looking at, I had two parameters, you know, good golf team, and I knew I wanted to study business, so a good business school. And Chapel Hill was top 10 at that time in both, so it was my favorite going in, and then I visited, and I was like, yeah, like, this is exactly what I thought it would be like. And the color is nice, too.
That's right, you got that Tar Heel blue.
Yeah.
And do you believe that your experience as a Tar Heel for University of North Carolina, do you think that's really prepared you for Q school, or is it somewhat different than that?
I think it depends on which player you ask and what their experience has been like. But for me, it's kind of hard. You know, I chose this path because I definitely wanted to get my college degree for sure. But I don't know, purely golfing wise, if college really prepares you to play professionally.
Okay.
It totally can. But I don't know in my case if it really was. But then again, I had a great experience playing for the team, being in school, taking all the classes. Like, yeah, I loved it all. But purely golf, I don't know. If you're listening and you're 18 and you're thinking of turning pro or go to college, if you really just want to play golf, yeah, just go do that. I don't think you need to go to college necessarily to get better at golf. But again, depending on which coach and which program you go to.
Oh, it's cool. That's an interesting take. We haven't heard that from anyone else before. But yeah, it's kind of interesting that you're saying if you really want to be a professional golfer, you don't necessarily have to go the college route.
Yeah, it's not a must. I don't think so. There's this girl, Anna van Dam. She's Dutch.
Yeah.
So we're about the same age. And she decided not to go to college in the U.S. And she turned pro and played Q school for the Ladies European Tour, and she made it through. And after like a year or two, she started playing very well there, and then made her way over here to play LPGA. So that's how she got here. So now, you know, I saw her in San Francisco, and sometimes I think about that because, you know, we're about the same age. We took a different route. She got there a little quicker, And then sometimes I wonder, like, I play LET. I don't know. Yeah, you just wonder, but you never know. But then again, I do have a college degree, a very good one, so I'm pretty happy about that.
Yeah, even our own top golfer in Canada, Brooke Henderson, she didn't really do the traditional college route either.
Right. And
she's had massive success on tour. So I can see how you're saying you get both sides of it, but you really wanted that business degree as well, so it worked out for you.
Yeah, I definitely, you know, at age 18, I mean, I was a good amateur player, but I don't think I would have been ready for Q school at that age. Maybe like a year or two later, but yeah, definitely not at 18.
Oh, cool, cool.
Yeah, I guess no one can take the college degree away from you. That's something that you'll have for the rest of your life, no matter what. This may be a bit further in the future. Might be getting the crystal ball out here, but when you finish playing, would you like to do something in golf that would utilize your degree, like something like running a club or having your own golf course, something like that?
Yeah, I would hope so, that I would still want to do something in golf once I finish playing one day. If that's not the case, then that's very bad, because that would mean I'd probably hate golf. But yeah, I would definitely, I don't know if I would do the club pro route. The hours don't attract me at all. But I would love to, you know, maybe teach at least, or at least on the side, just to kind of pass on the wisdom that I've acquired, you know, so it doesn't just go for nothing.
Yeah.
But yeah, on the, I guess my business degree, I feel like I'm using that every day, honestly, playing professional and like working with sponsors and all that kind of stuff and just managing yourself and finances. I feel like it's actually very useful now. And it's also kind of cool, most of these pro-ams that you play in. So, you know, before a tournament, there's usually one or two days where there's a pro-am going on, meaning there's one pro and usually 3 to 4 amateur players who are typically the sponsors of the event. Typically, these people, they work in business and they have some kind of finance, marketing, accounting, I don't know, you name it. Maybe a lawyer here and there. But it's very easy to talk to them because that's my background in education. So versus like some other girls.
Right. Fair enough. Now, just staying with wisdom for a sec, you shed a little bit of advice for those golfers considering going down the college path. But do you have any more words of wisdom for kids that want to take up golf? I know you kind of fell in love with golf when you went on a holiday in Portugal. So what's a message that you'll pass on to people that are thinking about taking up golf to become professionals like yourself?
Out here in the U.S., I would probably go to the first tee. I've done a couple of clinics with them, and they're really good. And it's not just about golf. It's also, like, trying to turn these kids into, like, good people as well and, like, have good communication skills, which I think golf can definitely teach. That's probably the easiest.
Nice. Someone who can take me to a golf course. Cope?
Yeah, I like that you mentioned the first tee, and I love the drive, chip, and putt initiative they've got going. There's a number of things that's sort of really boosting golf interest in kids, because for the longest time, it was something that sort of got overlooked, at least in this market. I imagine in Europe, there's far more interest in it to begin with, just because of the tradition there. But in the North American market, it is something that needs to be boosted a little bit.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to join the Pro Sports Podcasters Facebook group, where you will be able to interact with the hosts and talk to other sports fans. Now back to the show.
Now, something I want to ask you, is there someone that you fashion your game after or someone you idolize when you play?
Not really. I mean, when I was little, I always liked Michelle Wee because I kind of thought I looked kind of like her, but I mean, not necessarily her game these days. No, not really anyone in particular. I do like Colin Morikawa's swing.
Okay.
I try to play a cut as well, so that just kind of fits my eye. You know, the ball flight that he has and the swing that he has, I think it's a little similar to what I'm trying to do right now. Yeah, but no one in particular.
Then what's the strength of your game?
I hit it fairly far. Yeah, above average. And then I love hitting lob shots. That was my strength growing up. Like, if I'm in a chipping competition with someone, I will go to the lob shot, especially when I know that you're not good at it.
All right. So basically, you're a bomber / short game technician.
Sure. Let's go.
Some Patty T and some Phil Mickelson.
Yeah.
The lob shot. That's got to be the most difficult short game shot in golf.
Yeah, it just kind of works for me. Like, I don't really play tennis, but when I do, all I can do is slice it. It's the same thing.
And you use a 60?
I have a 58. Yeah, the 60, I feel like it's too much.
I agree with you. I actually tried a 60. It didn't work for me. I have a 58. Works for me great now.
Yeah.
So do you have a club sponsor yet or no?
I play Callaway.
Oh, okay.
Since I was maybe 14. And they've been really good to me. So yeah, Callaway's great.
Now, in our setup, you mentioned that you just come from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Shout out to our friends in the great state of Michigan. Was that in relation to the major LPGA Classic, by any chance?
Yeah, it was a Monday qualifier for the LPGA event at Blythe Field, I think that's how you pronounce it, golf course. But I didn't make it this time. So, yeah, I drove back home today, sadly.
That's all right. Kobe and I, we're in the entertainment industry when we're not recording the podcast, and we know what it's like to go to the audition and to not get the call back. So,
yeah, exactly.
I guess we can identify with that. But our guests do very well after they come on this show. So you're going to make more entries in future tournaments, and we look forward to that. So I wouldn't worry about that too much. I'm sure you're going to have a good summer, no doubt.
Yeah, thanks. I'm excited.
Why don't you tell our listeners about the Birdie Cast that you co-host?
Yeah, sure. So my friend, another fellow player, she actually plays on the LPGA right now, Maya Schechter, and I, we do this podcast called Birdie Cast, and it's about life on tour. So not necessarily about the golf stuff, but everything around it. So kind of what we talked about in the beginning on this episode. Yeah, we have episodes about caddies, where we stay, all the kinds of travel. And my favorite kind of episodes is when we get to interview another player and they do something very interesting off the course. I like to really dive into that. So yeah, if you want to check it out, you can pretty much find it anywhere, Spotify, iTunes. Just type in Birdie Cast and you'll find it. We're actually going to try to do an episode next week. So yeah, there should be a new one coming out soon.
I look forward to seeing that. Now, I got to ask, just staying on the topic of things not related to golfing, being in North Carolina, you mentioned before that you like food, so I got to ask, are you a fan of barbecue?
Yeah, I like barbecue.
Yeah?
I do like barbecue. And fresh corn on the grill is good, too.
There we go.
I don't know about the coleslaw, though.
Yeah, it depends on how you do the coleslaw, to be honest, because sometimes it can just be a bit much, and it's a side dish, so you don't want to...
Yeah.
You don't want it taken away from the main event.
Exactly.
The Carolina style is one of the best in the South. I know our friends in Texas and other parts of...
Who will argue that point.
Yeah, Carolina's, my humble opinion as a non-American, is probably the best of all of them.
I also like the hush puppies. I feel like they're very underrated.
Yes, they are. It's not something that is talked about a lot, but yeah, they're quite tasty, aren't they?
Yeah, I like the hush puppies.
All right, we got to stick with food now. Is there a Belgian dish that you think just signifies Belgium?
Oh, here. Okay, so do you guys know about the waffle thing?
Yes.
So you know like a Belgian waffle, or do you know more about it?
So no, continue on that train of thought.
Okay, so people ask me all the time, like, oh, like, what's a Belgian waffle like? And I'm like, I don't know, because there are two types of waffles and neither one of them goes by the name Belgian waffle. So I don't know what you're talking about. So we get two different types of waffles and they're based from two different cities. So one is in Brussels, which is our capital.
Yeah.
And then the other one is called Luxe waffle. So Luxe is another city. And they're two very different types of waffles. So like, even if you would mix it, I don't even know what that would look like. So yeah, the Brussels waffle, it's more crunchy and fluffy, like lighter. And then the Luxe waffle is more doughy and chewy, if you can imagine something with that. So yeah, whenever I see, you know, in the US, oh, Belgian waffle, I'm like, well, I don't know what I'm going to get. I'm not going to get that. That's definitely not going to be Belgian at all.
It won't be either city.
Yeah, it won't be either. So I'm like, yeah, forget it. I actually found a good place here in Raleigh. It's called Benelux. And it's like 2 minutes from my apartment. So I like to go there. And they have the Brussels waffle, and it says on the menu. So I'm very much a fan of that place.
Right on, nice. Right on. Have you played in Canada? Have you played here?
I have actually never been to Canada. I've been to Niagara Falls, but on the U.S. side.
Okay.
And then the one time I was driving, I think to Michigan from somewhere, and my GPS told me that going through Canada was faster somehow.
Yeah.
But I was in between visas and I couldn't risk it to hop the border like that. But right. I'll make it there one day.
Have you had one of our Canadian poutines?
I think only here in the U.S. And I don't know if they're, like, legit or not.
We have a third member of our team who would probably argue it's not legit.
Okay.
Who's not with us today, but just had to ask, because I know if he was here, he would ask you for sure.
Right.
But yeah, in Belgium, we have the best chocolate in the world, the best beer in the world.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
It's on.
It's not the best beer
and
in the world.
And then the fries. You know, French fries, they're actually Belgian. The French just stole them.
That doesn't surprise me.
They're actually
me.
Belgian fries.
Patat frites.
Yep. True story.
That does not surprise me in the slightest.
Yeah.
So I have to ask, a little bit more serious, what's it been like as a female athlete? You talked about some of the things on the Symetra tour that were different to the LPGA. Do you feel like those things and some of those challenges that you've had to overcome, do you feel like those would have happened if you were on the satellite PGA tour or the development tour on the men's side?
Yeah, the Korn Ferry Tour, that's called these days. Used to be the web.com. I mean, first of all, the purses are like
10 times?
Yeah, pretty much. My friend looked it up the other day. Like, she actually made a spreadsheet and all of that, and it was some ridiculous number. It was like less than 20 cents on the dollar.
Wow.
It's like crazy. Anyways, I could go on a whole episode about that. But yeah, it's not only the purses, it's, you know, like I said, on Symetra, they do their best with, you know, the resources they have and trying to rack up the purse in the first place. But it's just a lot different. There's still a lot of progress to be made, for sure. And then also, like, you know, talking about equipment earlier, there are, like, guys on the men's team in college. Most of these guys already get equipment. They just ask their coach, like, hey, like, I want to try this driver head. A week later, five arrives. Like, oh, yeah, just try them. Wow. For us, we're like, it's such a hustle trying to get even clubs sometimes. I have a good relationship with the Callaway rep, so I got pretty lucky with that. But I do know that a good amount of girls on the Symetra Tour, sometimes even LPGA Tour, like, actually buy their clubs, which I think is so sad.
Mm.
So that's a huge difference. I mean, even when you go to an LPGA event, you know, this week in Grand Rapids, there was Paul. You got Paul, who is the club repair guy. And he travels around with his trailer, just drives it with his truck. And he goes around to all the domestic events for the LPGA Tour. And then a couple times a year, he tries to go to the Symetra Tour when the LPGA is international, which is super nice of Paul. But there are no other trucks there. It's just one guy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, usually there are a couple of reps there, but they don't have their whole trailer or anything. They just travel with their travel bags, with their equipment. So it's very different than the whole setup on PGA Tour or even Korn Ferry Tour. Yeah.
Yeah. In relation to that, I wanted to ask you, so you're currently based in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yes.
Do you consider that an advantage as far as opportunity goes toward events, sponsors, and such, as opposed to going, say, back to Europe and playing there and trying to get on the tour that way?
I think in terms of sponsors and playing events, it probably would have been much easier to have gone home. But, you know, I graduated in 2017, and at that time, the Ladies European Tour wasn't doing that great. They had maybe like 10 events for full field events, which is not a lot. Like, Symetra, they usually play 20 to like 24, I would say.
Okay.
That's a full schedule. But 10 events, that's like nothing. So when I graduated, or before I graduated, actually, I decided that, you know, I want to stay here since I'm already here. And I want to try, you know, to play here. And also, I mean, even if you play well on Ladies European Tour, you want to play on the LPGA if you're, like, serious about playing professional golf and want to be the best player you can be and play with the best.
Yeah.
LPGA is where it's at. And that's also where the money is at, to be honest. I mean, European Tour is nice. It's a little more than Symetra, but it's nowhere near LPGA. So I knew that if, you know, I was going to play well, I had to come here anyways, and I couldn't quite see myself, or I felt like it would have been harder to go home, play, you know, in Europe for a couple of years, and then come back again to the US. I felt like that would have been two big moves, just also like socially and just, yeah, getting semi-settled somewhere because you're already traveling half the year anyways. So I decided to stay in North Carolina, and yeah, I'm very happy about that. Yeah, but I think it would have been much easier in terms of sponsors and playing events to have gone home, because usually in Europe, all those events, they have the hosting country federation, they get a certain amount of invites.
Okay.
So in Belgium, we did host an LET Access event, which is the Symetra Tour equivalent on the Ladies European Tour.
We interviewed Hannah Bowen, who's part of that tour, actually, from Wales. So we've heard a fair bit about that particular tour.
Yeah. So, you know, if I had gone home, then I pretty much could have played, I don't know, a good amount of those events without even having to go to qualifying school.
Yeah.
It might have been easier in the beginning to have been home, but my home is now here. So, yeah.
There you go.
Have you gone through the Q school for the LPGA before?
Yeah, pretty much every year. So I guess that's another difference too with the guys, is that literally any female professional golfer you'll meet in the US, they have played LPGA Q school, because that's also how you get your Symetra Tour status. Like, there's only one Q school for us.
Okay.
There's no Canadian Q school or Latin America Q school or separate Korn Ferry Tour Q school. Like, for us, it's just one Q school, three stages. And then wherever you end up in those stages is determines your status.
How big is the starting field?
So stage one, if I remember correctly, is probably just shy of 400 people. They play it on three different courses. It's like pretty insane.
Yeah.
And I think it was something like 80 or maybe 90 people get through first stage. That number might be wrong, but it's definitely less than 100. So it's a good chunk of people that don't have any status at all.
Yeah.
Not even near. Yeah, first stage can trip some people over. Like, I had a couple friends that played it for the first time, and they're good players, totally should have, you know, made it through, but it just kind of, yeah, it's stressful. It's so stressful.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I've had good scores at first stage, actually. Yeah, just need to get over that second stage part.
And do they move them to different locations, or is it always the same courses?
Yeah, so first stage is actually in Palm Springs, California. And so, you know, like I said, there are three different courses. But one of them is the Dinah Shore, which is where the A&A Inspiration is played, which is one of our majors. So it's actually, like, really cool to play first stage on a major, you know, championship course.
Poppy's Pond.
It's, like, super inspiring. I didn't even realize it until I showed up. It's like, oh, my gosh.
That's where they jump in.
Yeah, it's so cool. You walk right past it, and then, you know, there's a cut after the third day. So then the fourth day, everybody plays the Dinah Shore one. So, you know, if you play well the last round and you know that, you know, you'll probably make it through, it's like super cool. It's like, oh, man, I want to be here. You know, I'm going to jump in that pond later. I'm going to come back for you.
Yeah. So how did you find that course?
What do you mean?
Was it a good fit for you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I liked it a lot. I mean, I have to say, on TV, the 18th hole, most players, they go for it.
Yeah.
But it's totally not a gettable hole because that water. But they put like a stage or like a, what do you call that? Like where the audience sits.
The grandstand's behind it.
Yeah, like a grandstand. They put it right behind on the left side of the green in front of the water. So you can just whack at it, hit over the green, hit the grandstand, and it comes back on the green instead of going through the green into the water. So that was kind of funny to see that on TV. I was like, man, why are they going for it? That green is so small and there's water everywhere. And then I realized there's a grandstand right there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a very good course. And yeah, I would love to go back. Hopefully not for Q school.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I'm kind of hoping you get back too now. That's great. I like the fact that you found it a pretty good fit. and you see the differences between how it's set up on the LPGA Tour versus actually having to qualify through it.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I mean, you're on the come up and you broke the ice with the MediHeal event last week. I just feel, I'm feeling really good about your future on this tour. I think if you're listening to this show, you need to remember the name Leslie Klutz. So, Leslie, where can our people find you on social media?
Probably Instagram is the easiest. It's just at Leslie Klutz. Yeah, BirdieCast is also on Instagram. I don't know. I have a bunch of different accounts, actually. But if you just type in Leslie Klutz, you'll find it. Yeah, I also got Twitter or Facebook, but I would probably go with Instagram. I also have TikTok. I started that recently. Yeah, but not going that successful yet. But maybe you guys can help.
No worries.
I mean, we'll definitely share your handles, but I'm not going to, I can't promise a dance or anything like that. I've seen some of those TikTok reels. There we go. Actually, just one last question. I have to ask, being at Chapel Hill, Tar Heel, golf, that does kind of remind me of Michael Jordan. You ever see him around? And you
went no, see? I haven't met him yet. I'm sure maybe one day I will. Yeah, but not yet.
I look forward to that. I look forward to seeing you beat him in a golf
game. That's right.
I better bring some cash because I heard that he likes to gamble.
All he does is gamble. That's right.
Well, thank you for that, Leslie. We appreciate your time.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, no, great to have you on. What's your next event?
Cincinnati next week for a Symmetra Tour.
Symmetra Tour event? Okay.
Yeah, actually, fun fact about that. So a couple of years ago, it was the first time. It was a new event, maybe like 2 or 3 years ago now. And we played at TPC Riversbend.
Yeah.
Riverbend or Riversbend? I think it's Riversbend. I can't remember. It's a TPC course.
Yeah.
And apparently, it was the first women's tournament at a TPC course.
What?
2-3 years ago.
Seriously?
I cannot believe that. Yeah.
I almost want to look that up. I think you're lying.
No, I did. Yeah.
That doesn't seem possible. There's so many. Yeah. And it seems like every single location that's a TPC event holds something PGA related. Or at least, at least web.com or McKenzie or Korn Ferry or whatever.
And then also, if you're a guy and you have status on any of those tours, even if it's McKenzie or whatnot, you don't even have to have full status. Like, it does not matter. If you have a credential, you show up to a TPC course and you can play, practice there. It doesn't matter. You can do whatever you want. But for us, it's almost impossible to get on there to practice.
Basically, you can only practice there if there's an event scheduled there.
Yes, or if you go with one of the guys as your guest. But like so it's
that is brutal. Yeah, that is brutal.
Because there, you know, some of the players, they move or something, you know, and they're trying to find a place to practice. And then, oh, there's a TPC course nearby. So, you know, they go inquire to see if they could practice there. And it's like, yeah, no, sorry. Even if you're LPGA, it doesn't matter. Like, I've heard some of these crazy responses. It's like,
yeah, that's nuts. That's archaic.
Yeah, it's pretty sad.
It was great talking to you, Leslie.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
Have a good night.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
If you have any questions for the Pro Sports Podcasters, be sure to reach us on our Twitter account, where you can also
slide into our DMs
and catch the latest snippets, dirt, and other exclusive things that we will tweet.
Check us out at PPodcasters on Twitter.